The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Bam. Hey, we're live, pal. AK, shut up. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the A-Side Live Chat. There's no music today because, as you can see, Casey is off shooting an Anderson Silva workout in Los Angeles, possibly a scrum, we don't know, ahead of Anderson Silva's... it's an exhibition match, correct, AK?
Yes, exhibition boxing.
It's an exhibition boxing match against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., who... I am not a fan of that fight or the fighter. Anyway, regardless, I don't have the music because Casey is busy. So I am producing slash hosting slash pulling your questions up. So I'm on like quadruple duty today. So if I'm not as engaged as usual, that is why. I'm learning on the fly. So joining us this week, it's the Alex Show, or as AK Lee refers. What did you refer to it on Twitter as?
Well, this is like the third time, I think, in the last year, I think, that Alex Savas and I have both done the A-Side Live Chat. So this is officially the Alex and the Alex Tokyo Drift.
Because it's the third time? Is that what you said?
This is the third time. The fourth time, I don't know what I'm going to do, because that's when they reset the names, but we'll figure it out.
What was the fourth one called?
Just Fast and Furious. They removed the... Or the opposite, they added the... I can't remember. Oh, no, they removed the...
The fifth one was Fast Five?
That's fine.
I have a fun story about Fast Five that I'll tell at another time. But yeah, it ends with The Rock. The Rock bought my movie tickets to see Fast Five.
What?
It was a fun time.
I'm going to remind you to finish that story before this is over.
Yeah, I'll finish it at the end of the episode so people stick around.
Yes.
And then it's not even a ridiculous story. It's just a very odd story and just a lot of I had to be at the right place at the right time moments. But anyway. You guys heard AK Lee, Alex Savas, how's life in California?
Oh, California is really testing me, you know? There's a wildfire burning like 5 miles from my house, and like nobody here bats an eye, and then there's little old Midwest me, and I'm like, should we be panicking? But I guess not, I don't know, but it's just not normal. It's just, there's ash everywhere, it smells like smoke, smells like somebody's like burning a campfire in my living room. It's just the most weird thing, but I'm trying to get used to it, but it's testing me.
Is this the first wildfire you've experienced in California since you moved there?
That's close enough to me for me to panic.
Have you been in LA for more than a year now?
Yeah, just over a year.
Wow. So yeah. Anyway, you guys know the drill. I guess I should ask how. AK, how's Ed life in Moncton, Canada?
Moncton, New Brunswick. Oh, it's glamorous out here. No, shout outs to Moncton. It's Moncton, New Brunswick, right? If I get that wrong, I feel so
What are you asking me for? I've never heard of Moncton.
I know. I feel so bad. UFC had a card there. What do you mean you've never heard of Moncton? UFC had a card there.
Was that Anthony Smith?
Anthony Smith, yeah.
So when I first joined MMA fighting, I was kind of made I was assigned pretty much every single fight card to like do the recaps and stuff for every single fight night. And that's the first one I missed because I had to go to a wedding. So that one is not in my Rolodex of knowledge. I remember Artem fought Michael Johnson because Michael Johnson missed weight, even though Michael Johnson missed weight. Yeah. He was supposed to be Zubaira because this was the first card Artem, after the 220.
And then Artem was like, give him his money back. I'm giving him his first penalty back. Yeah.
Because Zubaira was part of the 229 chaos in Las Vegas. So he got pulled from that card. And then the main event, Anthony Smith and Volkan, right? Ozdemir?
Sorry, one second, Jose. I'm having some audio issues. It's on my end. If anyone else is having them, let us know in the comments. But one second, let me try something here. I'm going to try no headphones for a second. Hold on, see.
We're going to hear you then. We're going to hear ourselves. Anyway.
You're going to hear everything. No, I'm going to hear. Oh, you're going to hear me. All right, don't worry about it. Just
the joys of pretend. Live. The joys of live television.
It's fine. Like I said, we don't have the truck here today. We don't have the man in the truck, but otherwise, I'm catching most of it. It's fine.
Cool Alex was not here for my many technical difficulties when I first took over the A side. That was a dark time.
Oh, nobody remembers that.
I do. I still wake up at night thinking about it.
No. The show's been running. The Jose edition of the A side's been running smoothly since day one. I don't know what you're talking about.
We're coming up on a year, probably like 2 years, probably. I hadn't even thought about that. Because when everyone left to ESPN or The Athletic or whatever, for a while it was the Jose and AK Lee show, and I've been fighting for a bit. We would like take turns go to bed to like stay up and write articles. Anyway, no one cares about that. You guys know the deal. You can ask questions on the site. Questions on the site get priority because you took your time to go on MMAfighting.com to leave your comments. I got a bunch of them lined up already. You can leave them in the YouTube comments. No promises I will see them this time because I'm doing 1,000 things at once. Or you can tweet it at one of us. Or, as a few of you have done in the past, I don't know if you're watching this time, you've texted me questions while we're live on air. So, without further ado...
How do they do that?
There's these things called telephones, and they text you.
Did you tweet out your number?
No. These are, like, friends of the show. That like or various MMA media personalities. Like shout out to Matt.
I think it was creeping.
Shout out to Matt Wells, good friend of the show and one of my main victims on Between the Links has texted me questions. Anyway, you guys know.
You didn't introduce. What's up? You didn't introduce me. You didn't introduce me as the reigning interim BTL champion.
That's right. You are the interim BTL champion. You're not the real champion until you beat Phoenix though, which is never gonna happen.
That's never gonna happen. Let me have this one.
That was a fun, the gauntlet match? I definitely...
Oh, that was so
fun. See, here's the thing, though. Sean definitely beat me, for sure. And I think I definitely beat Phoenix. But that's neither here nor there. You guys know the drill. Ask your questions in the Twitters or the comments or whatever. AK, if you see a question in the YouTube comments, just shout it out. Maybe I can find it. But without further ado... Let's go. First one. From MMG 2K20, Mick Tapper. People have accused McGregor of exposing his neck and tapping every time the going gets tough. However, looking at Tony, who has not been the same since the Gaethje beating and refuses to tap to deep arm bars and heel hooks, is McGregor doing the right/smart thing to avoid punishment? The damage Tony has taken in the last few fights is very worrying. So yes, we'll set the scene here, where if you guys live under a rock and you didn't watch UFC 262, and it's Wednesday, May 19th, and you still haven't watched it. Tony Ferguson was in a very deep heel hook against Beneil Dariush and didn't tap out. You could see him writhing in pain. This is now the second straight fight where he didn't give up. The first one, of course, he was stuck in a very tight, was it armbar, correct, against Charles Oliveira at UFC 256. That was the co-main event as well, three-round fight. Didn't give up on back-to-back deep submissions. I don't know. I've heard this theory that McGregor gives up his neck when the going gets tough. Casey Lydon, from the truck. I don't know if he subscribes to that theory, but we did have this interesting argument where for a while we didn't have this image of... There was no image of Conor McGregor like laying out, like just toasted. Like you've seen the photos of Ronda getting knocked out. You've seen the photos of Anderson. You've seen the photos of Stipe now. Like, it's been the thing where you see these dominant champions just out, cold, unconscious, bloody on the canvas. We haven't seen that with Conor McGregor until the Dustin Poirier knockout. It's always been submissions, and then he gets up and he's fine. Against Habib, against Nate, you know, he just gets caught. Until Dustin, we haven't seen really him done on the canvas. So, AK, do you subscribe to this theory that McGregor gives up his neck? And if so, is that the smart thing to do?
It is a smart thing to do in general, but I always kind of hated the McTapper nickname. There's a lot of reasons to hate Conor McGregor, but I don't understand. I always felt like he got like extra. It's weird. It's like I've never heard someone call like GSP a French tapper guy or whatever, le tapper, because of the he had one of the quickest taps, and I love GSP, but he had one of the quickest taps you'll ever see in your life. The first Matt Hughes fight, right? Yeah. He literally that arm bar was, and I don't blame him because I think he's actually really snapped that arm in like half a second. So I don't blame people for tapping out quickly. And the McGregor stuff is just weird because he has what three submission losses, the two in the UFC, one before. Mm-hmm. But it's just weird that he's the only guy that kind of gets that tag. If you want to say he has like really crappy submission defense, okay, I'm willing to go that way, but. The McTapper thing's a bit odd. Everybody, you know, a lot of people tap. Again, if you want to throw that in GSP, then do that. But again, I would prefer you don't throw it on either of them. So, but to the broader question, yeah, people should definitely be tapping out. And I'm not being critical of Tony Ferguson, by the way. Tony Ferguson is not human. He knows his pain threshold better than we do. Could something like that heel hook have a deleterious effect on the rest of his career? Maybe. But again, we're not doctors. We're not Joe Rogan. We're not able to diagnose injuries as soon as they happen. On the UFC broadcast, so really, I'm being a bit soft here. I'm not criticizing either man. If you tap quickly, more power to you. If you don't tap, I mean, again, it's probably somewhat ill-advised. But Tony's super tough, and there's probably a lot of reasons that he's been in the slump lately, besides just the accumulation of damage and his, you know, him being too tough for his own good.
Well, so who's he tapped out to? Nate Diaz, extremely high level black belt. Khabib Nurmagomedov, who makes all of his wins lately have been by submission. Like taps Conor, taps Gaethje, taps Poirier. So don't hang your head on being submitted by Khabib Nurmagomedov. But cool, Alex, do you subscribe to this theory that Conor willingly gets submitted, as this MMG 2K20 set states?
No, the thing is, like, yeah, Conor McGregor is going to experience the highest of the highs, but also with that comes the lowest of the lows. So he's going to take as much glory and praise as he is going to take, you know, all that negativity too. The idea that people shouldn't be tapping, or that we should even be commenting on when the appropriate time to tap, is just ridiculous. I mean, like AK said, everybody has their own pain threshold. I'm sure that adrenaline comes into play. That probably, you know, masks a lot of it for some people, maybe not so much for other people. And, you know, in your head, you might be thinking, like, look, I don't got this. Why subject myself to potential injury when I could come back in 2 weeks right now if I tap, get another fight, and keep this train going? So, no. The fact that, you know, Tony feels, I don't know if it's just, like, this mentality that, like, you're not some sort of tough guy if you're tapping. Like, let's just, we could just end that, you know, now. Because it's just idiocracy. Like, it's ridiculous.
I think the problem with Tony's most recent one is if you get submitted with, you know, an arm, broken arm, that's like a couple weeks. You have to take a couple weeks off anyway. You get submitted with a choke, you can probably get back in the gym in a few days. You get in a heel hook and you shred your ACL, you're out for a long time, especially as someone that Tony's age, who that'd be three in a row with a torn ACL. Who knows if he ever comes back after that? So I don't, and a lot of guys you see get caught in submission, I feel like they just aren't even aware that they're going out. Like, remember when Holly Holm went to sleep against Misha Tate? She was still trying to get out, and then her body just shut down. And then she woke up, and she was like, what happened? Tony was very clearly aware that his ACL was going to pop. And he was like, F it, rip my leg off. I think that's a little, that's a little much. Don't rupture your ACL, or your meniscus, or whatever, or your Achilles, just to show yourself you're tough. Regardless, he survived, and his knee is apparently fine. Beneil Dariush said he heard it pop in there, which is gruesome. But, But to answer the specific question, I don't think Conor McGregor willingly loses by submission just so he can, quote, get back in there. But anyway, I digress.
That's a good point, though, Jose, because, yeah, you're right. A knee can be, like, a year to, like, maybe 18 more. Months, yeah. Maybe a year and a half. And then that's, like, just talking about getting back to normal and then, like, actually getting back to normal. And then, yeah, Tony would be, like, almost 40 if he had suffered a severe knee injury again. We haven't had I hope we'll get the medical suspensions in the next couple of days. Yeah. But, you know, Texas Commission, we don't know. hopefully that'll come up. I don't want to take away from the listener and reader questions, but did you find it odd that the referee, because a referee can call a stoppage with a verbal sort of cry of pain, right? He looked like he, I didn't hear it. I don't know if I heard it, but obviously if you watch, it looks like Tony cries out, right? Like in
pain. He absolutely, I was about 10 feet away from him. He absolutely.
Yeah, you were there. So were you surprised the referee didn't step in? And for anyone wondering, it went with Joe Warren, Chael Sonnen have done it, but you didn't think that was enough? I was like, oh no.
No, I think if I'm looking it up right now, I think Mike Beltran was the referee for that. And Mike Beltran is, for those of you who don't know who he is, he's the one, you guys have all seen him, the one with the really long mustache that's like braided going down. He is an exceptional referee. And he is high level fights, and he's one of those referees that, like Mark Goddard, it is his octagon. So I think Mike Beltran was right there looking. I bet he had a conversation with Tony in the back where if he goes, if I get caught, let it go longer, and I trust Mike Beltran. So if Mike Beltran didn't end it there, I'm not going to argue it, because he's one of those like referees that I trust 100% with what's going on in there. He's an exceptional referee. The only thing I don't like about Mike is he's the one, do you remember when AJ Agazarm and Chris Lencioni had that beef and then they fought and it was a very bad fight? And then Chris Lencioni won and they were still jawing at each other and they tried to walk away and Mike Beltran literally grabbed their wrists and made them fist bump. And he's like, "You will say good fight." I was like, "What are we, children? Like, they don't like each other. Don't force it on them." Anyway, that's the only weird thing.
I don't want to go off on another tangent, but I'll just say I actually don't think Mike Beltran is a great referee.
Really?
I'm in the minority on this.
Maybe not. I've never had an issue with anything.
For the reasons you said, I think sometimes he's too controlling, but I think that's also a positive in this sport. I think you need to be assertive as well. Fair. So I might be testing it.
I like Dan Mergliotta a lot, but I don't like at all how he handled that Michael Venom Page situation. Remember when he stopped the fight because Michael Venom Page was like showboating? It's a fight, dude. Just let him do what he wants.
I know.
You know, like, know. Whatever, regardless. Anyway, we can get into the whole showboating, not showboating. But with that question, we're going to go into this. From Daniel Pompilio on Twitter, where does Tony Ferguson go from here? Will they cut him or one more loss, then they cut him? ? So, cool Alex Savas. Where does Tony Ferguson go from here? This is three straight losses. He got his soul taken away by Justin Gaethje, and then back-to-back, I'm going to say he's, lost six rounds in a row in the last two fights? I don't remember how the scoring of the Justin Gaethje fight, because that just feels like one long round to me, because it was so back and forth. But back-to-back dominant decision losses, 230-27 is probably so cool. Alex, where does Tony go from here?
I don't see him going anywhere yet. He's still a huge draw and he's still been fighting like absolute killers, so I don't really find that there's a need to cut him. I guess, you know, it probably all comes down to money like everything always does, but I still think he's just too big of a draw. He's got such a huge fan base. I just don't see the UFC getting rid of him yet.
Yeah, there's no possible way they cut Tony right now. It was at the press conference 100% Tony Ferguson and anti everybody else. Michael Chandler got a lot of cheers because he's, you know, the Texas. Incoming Texas, USA, he's fighting Brazilian. But I think Michael Chandler definitely won a lot of people over in Texas also because of his personal political sidings, but carries the American flag around and talks in t-shirt slogans and all that stuff. And then they booed Beneil Dariush out of the building, which was so bizarre to me, considering this man, you know, builds orphanages in his spare time, and Tony Ferguson breaks his students' ribs because, quote, he made him do it. That's the man you're cheering? I like Tony Ferguson just fine. I just think he's kind of an intense dude on fight week. I don't think he's a mean-spirited person, but it was 100% Tony Ferguson, and when I sat outside there for the co-main event, I couldn't hear the person right next to me when Tony Ferguson was being introed. That place was El Kukui country. But AK Lee, where does Tony Ferguson go from here?
I just want to touch on the Dariush thing. I'm surprised. I know they're just not familiar with him, but he's also like a super Christian guy.
Yeah.
Don't they love it? Don't y'all in Texas love Jesus?
He's Syrian. He's a Syrian fighter born in
Iran.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. I know, I get it. He's a foreigner, but I mean, you would think he's been in the UFC for so long. Yes. You would think they know by now. He's essentially an American guy. Who loves Jesus.
I think it's 100% just they love Tony Ferguson.
Yes.
That's literally just it.
And also the he wrestled his way to a win, so the fans, it's too much wrestling. Where's Will and punch him more?
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. So I've been kind of sick with this. I kind of want to see Tony try welterweight, not because he can be a contender there. I do not think if he has issues with wrestlers at 155, wrestlers at 170 are going to destroy him. But I'd rather I just want him to close out his career with some fun fights with guys like Robbie Lawler, Carlos Condit. I think when Mike Heck and I were doing our matchmaking show, I think I settled on Matt Brown. I think I want to see Matt Brown and Tony Ferguson fight. No. Are they buddies or something? Or you just don't want to see that
fight? Matt Brown's linked up already. Against.
But they can still happen. I think Tony's off for a while.
Someone said there's one fight to make, Cowboy Ferguson 2, and then they can retire.
I see people saying. I see that, yeah, because people say obviously Cerrone wants to stay at 155.
Yeah.
I also for the longest time, and this is definitely just sort of both guys are on losing streaks. Let's just throw them in there. Ferguson, Woodley, but again, if Woodley's going to wrestle his way,
Woodley's not in the UFC anymore.
He can come back. It's not like ruled out. His contract is up, but he's not like out. They could bring him back.
I think he's out. I don't think they're going to bring him back.
You think he's coming back?
No, I think he's going to fight someone next.
Yeah, but either way, I would like to see Ferguson just screw weight cutting and take some fun fights at 170. There's a lot of great fights for him still at 155 too. But for me, it's weird. I just really, I'm like, change weight classes will fix all kind of problems. But yeah, he's not going to become he's not going to become a contender again. But I also agree with Alex Savage. He's also not getting cut though.
Can you see this one? Can you guys see this comment?
Yeah.
Yep.
Sharma says people like Michael Chandler because he's pretty motivational. Do you guys find Michael Chandler motivational?
Let me say something about this because I have mentioned this a few times. Michael Chandler's Instagram is what we call toxic positivity. And if you don't know what this is, please Google it because it is just as bad as being negative. It's the whole, I don't take vacations. I don't ever stop. If you're stopping, you're not 100% focused on your goals. And that is just the worst. I mean, I hate that kind of mentality. One, don't tell anybody. If that's what you want to do and you want to take a vacation, hey, go ahead. That's all you. But like to put that out as like you cannot achieve your dreams if you are taking breaks is absolutely insane. You're going to cause people to work themselves to the ground. Toxic positivity. It's not motivational to me.
That's not fair.
I don't have the air horn noises or else I would.
That's not very alpha of you, Alex Savas. That's not very alpha of you. You heard me.
There you go. Found it.
Okay, all right. That RIP headphones. That came in super hot.
I don't have KC settings. Sorry.
That was super hot fire, as they say in the club. Alex, yeah, that's not very alpha of you. Clearly, you're not beasting 25-8 like the rest of us.
Sorry.
But toxic positive. How dare you say that to the prince of positivity?
I do agree with you, Alex, and I've never heard the phrase toxic positivity before, but there is an alarming number of fighters who are like I always joke, like, are you a real UFC fighter if you haven't posted a photo of like a lion and being like, you know, no days, like out for blood, can't wait to return. It's like, come on, dude.
The king doesn't rest.
Yeah.
But you know what? Jose, you may not have heard the term, but you're very familiar with it because toxic positivity is very common with sports teams, with organizations someone brought it up recently with AEW, but I would say the UFC, really any fan base, which is just too like, oh, such and such, like this company can do no wrong.
Yeah.
Everything they do is great. Da, da. That's another kind of example of toxic positivity. So it is out there, and we're not telling people to be like cynical or something, but it's like, you just, you know, be balanced, have, you know, you can criticize something and still love it. Like, we're super critical of the UFC all the time. Everyone knows, people always call us on the media and they're like, oh, does the media hate the UFC?
Well, see, like, here's the thing too, that kind of bothers me. Like, it doesn't bother me. Like, I've just noticed it. I think a lot of people just want to criticize the UFC just because it's the UFC and they don't like certain things, but they do a lot of, like, to their credit, they make a lot of fights that we all want to see, but all at the same time, they do a lot of things that everyone hates. I think if you're going to, I don't like people that only point out the negativity, and I don't like people that only point out the positivity. Does that make sense? Just cover both equally. Like, I can tell you exactly, if we get UFC questions, I can tell you exactly who's going to just talk about all the terrible things. And I know exactly if someone brings up the UFC, they're only going to talk about positive things. You got to cover both sides. End of argument. Someone, here we go. Perfect comment. Lion pictures. The grind never
stops.
From Jeremiah. Yep.
He's got a wolf. He's also got a. He's doubling up. He's also got a Wolverine icon.
So there you go. Point.
That's Alpha. Jeremiah, that's Alpha. Thank you. Now, this man is beast in 25-8. This man is beast in 25-8. 366, 100 years of century. 101
I thought
years
Corey Anderson's new nickname is Overtime, isn't it?
We're not. Yeah. But I think his nickname is Overtime, but I think he's still living that 25-8 lifestyle. I think he's doubling up on the branding.
Right. Anyway.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down, and new customers to DraftKings can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over. Age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Next question from Tristan Gordet on the site. Edson Barboza's chance at being featherweight champion. 2, MMA fighting. What percentage of a chance do you give Edson Barboza on becoming the featherweight champion down the road? Do you think he'll have the same problem he did at lightweight due to the depth of contenders in the division, or do you think the featherweight division isn't as stacked? So, yes, if you weren't aware, again, if you live under a rock, Edson Barboza won. Was it Fight of the Night? Right?
Yep.
So it was Fight of the Night. It was everyone's pick for Fight of the Night when it came out. If you're Jen Mishu, you probably said it was a deep cut, dark horse. You know, no one's ever heard of Edson Barboza, Shane Burgos. But Edson Barboza knocked out Shane Burgos in a very bizarre and very violent fashion. It was a delayed reaction. Like, he punched him. He had this combo, and then, like, 5 seconds later, Shane Burgos fell down. We could talk about the knockout in a little bit, but AK Lee, what percentage of chance do you give Edson Barboza at becoming champion at 145 pounds? And keep in mind, according to him, he is 3-0 at featherweight. Of course, he's referring to that very controversial decision loss to Dan Ige.
Percentage is such a weird thing to calculate here. I mean, for me, it's low. Because if it's a binary question, I just say no. I don't think it's going to happen. Anything can happen in MMA, though. So if we're going percentage, 25%. I do think, as the question sort of asks, is featherweight as deep as lightweight? I'm like, yeah, just about. Featherweight, bantamweight, 155 are so insanely deep. And I'm just looking at the kind of the rankings here, and there's a lot of guys who, like, on any given day, you can just get got. Like, you can't make a mistake. And I mean, you're a worse fighter than this person, but to be able to string together however many wins he'll need, like maybe at least two more wins, he's got a Yair Rodriguez, Calvin Kattar, Josh Emmett, whenever he comes back from injury. And any of those guys, again, could, like, it's, you know, 10 fights, maybe it goes 5-5. But if it's not your day, all takes a loss to knock you back. So, and the same thing happened to him at lightweight. He just, there's just a lot of great lightweights, and I think he's like one of the UFC's best lightweights ever. But was he ever that close to a title shot? Maybe more, no more than one fight away. But yeah, I think it'll be the same 145. I don't think he wins it. I'd be surprised if we got a title shot as well.
Cool, Alex. What did you make of Barbosa's performance, and what percentage of chance do you give him to be featherweight champ?
I'm going to go a little bit higher. I'm going to say 45%, because I think he's great at interviews. I know his English is a little broken, but like, he's such a personable guy. And for me, I think that like those sort of factors almost weigh heavier than somebody's skill set often. And I agree with like AK, like any one of those people that's ranked above him at a featherweight, I mean, they could all have an off night. He could fall backwards right into a title shot. Like, you just don't know. And he definitely has like the skill set to get it done if, you know, if the circumstances were right. So it wouldn't be, you know, crazy or out of the realm of possibility or anything. But I really enjoy listening to his interviews. I think he's a fun guy, and if people really get to know him, I think he stands a pretty good chance.
You should follow his social medias too, because I don't know if he does the whole motivational thing, but he's always posting videos of his son on Fight Week. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw that video clip of when he was weighing in at the ceremonial weigh-ins. His son, he posted a video of his son watching the broadcast down back in Aww. Florida, I think. And his son ran up to the TV and gave it a hug and was like, "Dad." So very, and his son is a very big baseball fan, apparently, if people weren't aware. For a long time, Edson Barbosa was very upset that his son was not a Muay Thai fan. He was a Jiu-Jitsu fan. So I followed up and asked if he was still sticking with Jiu-Jitsu, and now he's a baseball fan. Edson's like, "I don't even know the rules, but my son likes it, so good enough for me." So great dad, great fighter. I also agree with Cool Alex. So I give him a little higher chance at featherweight, mostly because lightweight was so convoluted at the top because people were like, you know, Conor wasn't fighting. There was a lot of beef between fighters, so they were always going to go for those big money fights at 155. Featherweight, once we get past tough, there's a whole line of contenders. I know Max is kind of the linchpin. There's also not as many wrestlers in that top 15 at featherweight. And Edson Barbosa, like, loses to Kevin Lee, loses to Khabib. There's obviously Chandler and Gaethje up there. We just saw what Dariush did to Tony Ferguson. I think there's more strikers in that top 10 at featherweight for him to have exciting fights than there is at lightweight. So, like, dude, I'll watch Calvin Kattar versus Barbosa, Holloway Barbosa. I've been asked for Giga Chikadze versus Edson Barbosa ever since Giga Chikadze made his UFC debut. So sign me up for any of those. The Yair fight is awesome as well. But again, I'm just naming strikers. Like the Josh Emmett fight, Josh is out for a while. But in a striking-heavy division, I am throw a dart at anyone in the top 15 at featherweight, and I'll watch Edson Barbosa fight them. And I will favor that to be fight of the night. And he just, I saw some of the comments asking how many fights he has left in his contract. Our own Guillermo Cruz reported last week that he has signed a new deal with the UFC, and he is very happy with the new contract. So at least, I'm going to say at least 4 to 8, because that's usually how contracts are. So let's, but again, sign me up for any of those names I just said in the comment section. I'm going to go quick to see YouTube.
Jose, can you name, I'm sure you can, any baseball player born in Brazil?
Any baseball players?
Born in Brazil. Born, not necessarily Brazilian descent. Born in, any, is there
oh,
any born
man.
In Brazil?
I have no idea. I honestly
I can't
don't
think
know.
Of any.
I know Leandro Barbosa, the basketball player. Was
oh, basketball.
Born in Brazil.
Basketball, I can name a ton of basketball.
I can't think of
Brazil,
any baseball.
Baseball, like, no, I don't think. That's why I'm surprised. So where's this kid? What's this kid watching?
I believe his son has spent most of his life in America.
Oh,
so
okay.
He's Floridian. Don't. So, like, because he's training at ATT. So Florida is obviously a hotbed for baseball.
Yeah,
you
got
the
that
Miami,
makes sense.
You got the Miami Hurricanes baseball team. You got Florida State. And then, obviously, you have the Marlins, the Rays, world's defending American League champions. You got a ton of, like, and spring training is down there. So if you're from Florida, you're probably playing football or baseball, honestly.
Yeah, because when you said Edson, like, doesn't even know the rules, I'm like, why would he? Like, I don't think Major League Baseball gets much play, like, in Brazil. I wouldn't imagine. Like,
doubt it. I'll ask
what his favorite baseball team is.
I think it'd be safe to say there are more people in America that follow soccer than Brazilians follow baseball.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. It has to be.
Anyway, moving on. From Dave, Gobout. I apologize if I mispronounced your name. I think this is a new commenter because I don't recognize his name. 3027 for Grundy. Remember the dark ages and how we used to weigh wrestling on an MMA scorecard? Are we finally past the days where a good performance on the feet can be negated by a single takedown per round? Very interesting question. So we're going to also use this opportunity to talk about that very bizarre 3027 Mike Grundy. AK Lee is already groaning and moaning and rolling his eyes about this. So AK, what did you make of the scorecard? And to answer this question specifically, are we past the quote-unquote dark ages of MMA?
Okay, yeah, you're right. Multiple things to answer. First of all, shout out to Jeremiah in the comments who mentioned Yan Gomes. Yan Gomes, was born in Sao Paulo. I think he grew up in the U.S., but he was born in Sao Paulo. So shout outs. Thank you, Jeremiah. I had not thought about that. What was I talking about? I'm sorry. Yes. So yeah, the 3027 scorecard was an atrocity. But I will say that was a great fight, which Landovnada clearly won. But Grundy was, I think, landing more than the commentators maybe gave him credit for. Venata was actually taking a lot of punches. At the same time, I think Venata is also one of those guys who can sort of slyly slip shots, kind of like Anderson Silva used to, like in his prime. Like, it would look like he's getting hit, but, you know, he's slipping it just enough that it's not like doing serious damage. I mean, if it was, he probably would have gotten knocked out. So, yeah, the 30-27 is bizarre. I don't know if we're quite out of the way of takedown stealing rounds, if only because the commentary is so shaky with this sort of thing. It depends who you have on. Some of them are doing a better job than others. And when the judges can be so inconsistent, it kind of goes both ways. I almost don't blame the commentators sometimes for misinterpreting the scoring criteria, because they're kind of just calling what they see. So if they keep seeing bad scorecards being put out, that's kind of, you know, what they love. So to be fair to the commentators, they have both responsibility to educate and also kind of say, well, look, this might be where the judges are going with this. It's not, you know, it's not our fault. We don't do the scoring criteria, and we don't do the judging. But, and so, you know, when one of these weird scores come up, it's like, it's kind of like, you know, they told us, they warned us this might be coming. I think we're getting better. I do think we're getting a lot better. We had weird scorecards, but we didn't have any outright robberies on Saturday. So that's a good sign. Thankfully, all the right people won. I thought there was one really close call with what was the one that really could have gone either way? What am I looking at here? Chukagi and Araujo, fine. I think you can make a case for Araujo, but I wouldn't call it a robbery either way. That's just a really close fight. So yeah, overall, I thought it did get better. So guys, if there's hope for Texas, there's hope for all of us. And I will say, I mentioned this on Twitter, it's kind of weird. The judge who gave that 30-27 for Grundy, Patrick Patlin, he was also the only guy who got the last time they were in Houston, 247, the only guy who got the Giles Krause fight right. So, you know, I can throw this guy under the bus, but also let's give him a little bit of credit for scoring a fight properly last time they were in Houston, if you want to look at it that way. So, but yeah, overall, I'm optimistic, Dave. God, I'm optimistic that we're getting better with the judging overall.
Was Patlin one of the judges in the Andrew Lee Murphy fight?
Oh, a good question. I'll check right now. I will look that up while you guys.
Because I'm reading right now, before UFC 247, Patlin hadn't scored a fight since 2017.
Yes, he was,
so was
one
like
of the
4 years or 3 years between scoring.
Correct.
And he had judged 4 fights ever. And that's in Texas. So basically, this judge has scored basically 5 total fights in his life, and he's judging a bout between very highly ranked UFC featherweight.
Yes. He had it for Murphy, to him and Judge Danny D'Alejandro did. And you know who didn't is a notorious judge. This guy who I think scored it right. He scored it for 29-28 Lee. Chris Lee, my cousin. So our cousin. So maybe there was some bias there. Chris Lee and I and Andrew Lee. So you know what? Maybe look. You know, you guys can investigate that on your own. But that's what I'm saying. It's like, look, we throw a lot of judges under the bus a lot. But I've become a little more sympathetic because sometimes they get it right, and we only call them out when they get it wrong. So
except for that but one I, judge, who's that judge? I think Mark Raimondi wrote a long thing about it when he was at MMA fighting, that one judge who, like, that's his gimmick, where he's just an idiot.
What?
Yeah. Like, there's like a judge that's, like, known for being controversial.
I don't know.
I don't remember his name.
Is he still working? Because
I don't
awful.
Remember. But I think Mark was telling me, like, every now and then he'll get an email about him. I don't know. I can't remember. I'll look it up. TBD. If I remember correctly. Anyway, Cool, Alex. What are your thoughts on judging in MMA? Because you were in Houston at UFC 247 for all that chaos.
Yeah, but I mean, we don't need to get into what each of us does on fight night, but my eyes are glued to my computer screen. Yeah. I rarely see what's going on. So I didn't even watch this fight, to be honest with you. So I'm not, I won't weigh in on this one.
Yeah, yeah. Fight nights are different. For people who always ask, like, oh, what did you think of this fight in this moment? Like, I was looking at my computer screen, my guy. I completely missed the Barbosa-Burgos card because I was looking at my computer. Or the knockout.
I shouldn't even acknowledge the comment. There was a comment on a post-fight show on Twitter that was like, you guys seem so, like out of it and, like, low energy. And I'm like, I almost wanted to reply. I'm like, mother effer, we recorded that at 3:45 in the morning Eastern time or something. Like, and it's not like, look, it's not like we're just watching the show all night. We're like jazzed up. Like, yeah, I've been watching the show all night. I'm ready to talk about it. No, we've been working for like nine hours. Yeah. And then we do the, and look, no excuse. Look, no excuses. Play like a champion. Absolutely. We
should get, I'll do better.
I'll do better next time. But dude, like this guy was like, I can't believe they have no energy. I'm like, are you serious?
You know, it's AKA, it's a hard life watching sports for a living. I understand.
I know.
Like, someone saw, like, I was like, someone asked me, like, oh, you don't really tweet much on Sundays after fights. I'm like, dude, I haven't slept in 36 hours. I'm like, when I was in Jacksonville, I worked all the way up until my plane, like, until I had to be at the airport. So I basically was awake for almost 48 hours working. And I fell asleep at my gate, and the stewardess had to come be like, sir, your plane is boarding. Like, you're going to miss your flight. Like, she had to wake me up in Jacksonville. I was like, huh? What? I was, like, drooling because, like, that's how much that week took out of me. So, anyway, fight weeks are different if you're working an event. Anyway, moving on.
Our union reps are watching this, like.
Let's see. Let's go through. I'm going through the YouTube comments. You see anything in the YouTube comments?
Oh, no, I was just looking at, I was looking for Brazilian baseball players, so I wasn't. Dean D says he thinks Mark was writing about Chris Lee, he's not sure. Maybe.
Bo Bichette is a Brazilian-American, I should say. Bo Bichette is Dante Bichette's son. He is one of the brightest.
Toronto Blue Jays?
Yeah, he's one of the brightest young, I was about to say fighters. One of the brightest young athletes in baseball right now. It was like
darn right he is.
It was like him, Fernando Tatis Jr., Craig Biggio's son getting called up. Like all these guys. Craig Biggio's son. He's also on the Blue Jays. He's not doing too great right now. Bo Bichette just can't stay healthy. But you could say that about anyone on the Blue Jays. Let's just go back to the comments.
All right.
Invicta FC returns this Friday with Invicta. Oh, Scott McCrite, longtime commenter on the site, with Invicta FC returning Friday on Access TV. Can you give a quick breakdown on both championship bouts and highlight some of the other talented fighters on this card? So, AK Lee, what are your thoughts on Invicta's return on Friday?
All right, now hold on. I think didn't this tie into another Invicta question? Am I crazy? Was it not, or maybe we got it on Twitter? I swear I saw someone also asking. Is the Invicta card, maybe it was in the YouTube comments too, is this Invicta card this Friday being overlooked? And I'm gonna tell you something, until I saw this question and the question in the YouTube comments, I completely forgot that that card was this Friday. Now, one, I'm an idiot. We know that, that's established, that's assumed.
Sure.
Two, maybe I'm a bad MMA fan, but this Friday has what? Also Bellator, which, you know, only happens to, in a main event that happens to involve, you know, maybe the greatest women's fighter of all time, one of the three greatest women's fighters of all time. So it's a really unfortunate like day for Invicta to be having a card. I feel like I'm just looking at it now. So we've got our main event, Karina Rodriguez and Diana Torquato. Is that right? Vacant flyweight title.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at these good fights. Alicia Zapatella is such a star.
Defending her championship.
But if I'm being honest, I actually did forget that this was this Friday. I knew it was coming up, did not remember it was this Friday. So Scott, bad on me, man. No, I really can't do a good job breaking down both championship bouts. That's just the honest truth. And so I'm really, really making more commentary on just how stacked this week is. And, LFA, I'm sorry, I'm just going through topology. Yeah, Bellator, and then of course Vegas on Saturday. So, I mean, look, there's only so much these promotions can do. You can only move your cards around so much. There's so many MMA promotions now. At some point, you're gonna overlap with someone. It's just unfortunate that it happens to also overlap with a major Bellator event with a women's title fight. So
well, this is also my apologies. This is Invicta's first fight on Access TV as well. So they're not have quote the promotional juggernaut of the UFC behind them, because remember they were on Fight Pass for so long and then they broke off. So this is their first. Do any of you guys have Access TV? Like, see, so I don't know if you'll be able to.
Nope.
Access TV is Mark Cuban's network. That's where Inside MMA? Was that where it used to be? AK?
I don't know. I didn't have it. I don't have that. We did have it in Canada, I think.
I can't remember the name of the show, but that was like for a long time. ESPN and Fox had their big shows with MMA, that was like the place to be. They also had the broadcast rights for New Japan for a while.
HD fights. They showed a lot of kickboxing. They showed a lot of kickboxing. It was so good.
It is a good show. And the headquarters is it's right across from the Staples Center, above. I can't remember what it's above, but like if you see the have any of you watched the ESPYs before? Mm-hmm. So you know when they walk the red carpet outside the Staples Center, right above that building there in front of at this like the second floor, that's Access TV. It's a cool little studio. Our good friend Rick Lee has worked there. A lot of our friends in the MMA media have probably got their start there, especially cameramen, because for a long time that was the only place you could go if you wanted to like shoot and edit content in MMA. But this is a good card. It's just unfortunate timing, as AK said. From Matt Bradbury on the site, MMA Grand Prix. If you had to make an 8-man or women MMA Grand Prix, regardless of promotion, what division would you pick and what fighters would you choose in each bracket? Interesting question. So we're going to play like this. I'll start with AK. Cool Alex and I cannot pick the same weight class as him.
Oh, you guys can have the first pick then.
Really?
Unless you want me to go first. I'm ready to go first. I don't know, but Alex Savas, if you want to fire off first.
Cool Alex, you need time to think of a...
I need time. Go ahead.
All right.
Okay.
Shoot.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I cheated. I looked at this question before on the site, obviously. So. Proper preparation prevents poor performance is what I always tell people. Also, shout out to Matt Bradbury. On to the next one, regular, who always has, like, I know why he's asked this question. He always has the deepest, like, matchmaking cuts. This guy's on top of all the names in MMA for sure. So I'm going to go with bantamweight. I think everyone knows I friggin' love bantamweights. The only problem with picking that is to eight person, like taking eight people. So many people will get cut. So, I mean, you got to get the champions. Okay, so Sergio Pettis is in there. Kyoji Horiguchi's in there. Mm-hmm. The one true bantamweight champion, Aljamain Sterling's in there, obviously. Piotr Jan. And then I got to get Patchy Mix in there. But that's five spots already. And then, like, think about the UFC bantamweight division. Now, let me look who I'm cutting from the UFC bantamweight division here. Jeez, like, Corey Sandhagen's got to be in there. And then you kind of want to have some fun names in there too. Like, I would love to throw like a Dominic Cruz or Aldo in there, kind of like for a veteran spot. But I'm leaving out like Merab. It's too hard. But
if you're gonna do bantamweight, I think if you've held a good way to answer these questions, like obviously choose all the champions, and after that, if you've held a belt, so Aldo, Cruz, Garbrandt, yeah. If you have been a former champ, that is your ticket in. That golden ticket gets you in the tournament. Also, like,
so many cool what
weight class is, like, Demetrius Johnson fights at 135 in one championship.
Yeah.
Like, it's tough. Eight man is tough for bantamweight. But that, thank you for taking Casey Lydon's answer, because he, of course, would have gone bantamweight. Yeah. Cool Alex, which weight class are you picking?
I'm confused because I want to pick women's featherweight.
I don't know if I
Because I want to see Cyborg and Amanda run it back, and then I also want to throw Kayla Harrison in the mix and just, like, light this shit on fire. Mm-hmm. Sorry. but I don't know, like, what the proper weight class would be for that and where you're going to, you know, grab the rest of the people for the bracket. So I feel like if, you know, you give people some time and they want to, you know, jump into this, people can, like, hop up a weight class or something. But I don't know. I think that would be interesting, especially if we're talking cross-promotional.
Alex, what about open weight? What about open weight?
There you go.
115 to 145. Throw some names that have to be in there.
No, dog. You can open weight is all the way up to like 265 pounds. Because you could throw Gabby Garcia in there, and then you could do Mackenzie Dern, Gabby Garcia too. in MMA, because of course Mackenzie Dern tapped Gabby Garcia in the grappling thing, and that kind of Mackenzie Dern?
She never tapped her. She never tapped.
She won. She beat her in a grappling tournament.
She won on point. She won.
Did she win on
points? She won on points. She has not.
All right.
Yeah. She has not tapped her, and I believe there was a point deduction in there somewhere. And I'm not taking away from Mackenzie Dern's win, but
cool.
It's not like she dominated.
Then
yeah,
there's your storyline.
Sure.
I love it.
Sure.
Sure.
So in women's featherweight, though, according to RankingMMA.com, the top eight women's featherweights are Amanda Nunes. Wait, this can't be right because Cyborg isn't in this ranking, and there's only four people. This is not incomplete. So Amanda Nunes, Felicia Spencer, Zara Dos Santos, Leah Ledson, Danielle Wolfe.
Oh, it's UFC. It's UFC.
That's just UFC. That's very bizarre. Anyway, but obviously you got to throw Cyborg in there. Kayla Harrison can be thrown in there. Megan Anderson. Any of those fighters. I would pick, I think the obvious answer is lightweight, so I'm not going to say that because everyone wants to see a lightweight Grand Prix because we've been talking about a possible lightweight Grand Prix. Ooh, I would choose probably welterweight for sure, and I wouldn't even pick the top eight. I would just make fun fights. I would choose, let me think. Obviously, I would choose Usman because he's the champ. I would choose Lima. Who's the one? Is there one welterweight champion? Eddie Alvarez,
Christian,
I guess.
Christian Lee should be
a lightweight. I think he's just fighting at 170.
Right. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, like actual 170, like guys who'd be
Like if they were in the UFC or Bellator or anywhere else, they would be welterweight. I would choose Masvidal. I would choose Michael Venom Page because I want to see him fight. I would basically just choose the most violent possible fighters, like Vicente Luque, Hamza Shamayev, Robbie Lawler. Like Robbie Lawler versus Michael Venom Page, come on. Give me that fight all day. But I would just choose the most violent fighters at 170, and I just put him in a tournament. Because
Nick Diaz, throw him in there.
Ooh. Nick Diaz versus...
I had to do it.
Yeah, Nick Diaz can throw in it, and the opening fight is Robbie Lawler, Nick Diaz too, because I've been asking for that. Because we're gonna give that the Rumble Romero treatment, where we're not gonna risk it, we're just gonna book it right away. That's what's gonna happen. But anyway, you guys can tell us in the comment section what you guys want.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Let's see. No, I don't think any of us want to talk about Joshua Fabia, so we're not going to talk about Joshua Fabia again. AK, what fights on the Bellator card besides the main event are you most looking forward to? Well, answer that while I look for questions.
Okay, let me refresh my memory here. Well, I'm super excited now about after hearing Danny Sabatello's interview with Mike. I get it. Like everyone who's debuting with a new promotion is going to say all the right things, like, "Oh, I'm going to dominate the division and all that stuff." But he's got a nice record. He looked good on Contender Series. And by the way, the other half of this fight is Brett Johns, whose debut I was excited about anyway. So yeah, that's kind of a cool matchup that they fell into. I actually think it's a more compelling matchup than the original with Matheus Matos. Matos is like fine. He's a veteran. He was on Ultimate Fighter Brazil. I like him, but I thought like that was being set up for Johns to just crush him. That might be the case here too, but at least there's an element of like, well, this guy's on such late notice. It's a wild card. It's Bellator. Anything can happen. Never bet on Bellator fights. I'm obviously still expecting Brett Johns to win, but I've said that about many Bellator fights and been very, very, very wrong in the past. So, I think that's a very cool fight to look out for. I don't know. I assume it's still...
We're going to use this question, and I don't like how it's phrased, but we're going to use this question to talk about Bellator. From Border 13, do you think Valerie Lareda is going to twerk after her fight? Do you guys mind people celebrating while their opponent is KO'd? Cool Alex, would you like to address this question?
If Valerie Lareda wants to twerk after her fight, Valerie Lareda is going to twerk after her fight.
There you go.
I don't mind people celebrating. I think there's a difference between, like, you know, hovering over someone's knocked out body and, like, yeah, mocking them versus just, like, being excited for yourself that you've done such a phenomenal job. Yeah, I don't know why you specifically called out Valerie Lareda. I'm not really sure what you meant by that, Border 13. If you'd like to specify in the comments, that'd be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Hey, Kaylee, you're on record saying Valerie Lareda's last celebration was the best dancing we've ever seen.
So good. It beat out the time. I don't know if you guys remember where Sergio Moraes did this. I think Gui had to explain to me. It was like a trending dance in Brazil where, like, you turn upside down onto, like, you turn upside down to your shoulders and you wiggle your ass in the air. That was number one. I can't find a clip of it anymore. I'm sure it's out there. I just haven't looked in a while. That was, like, by far number one. But now Valerie Lareda replaced it because the timing was perfect. She just scored a highlight reel knockout. She is very – people can criticize whatever. You don't like her public image, that's fine. I think it's stupid to criticize that, but everyone can say what they want. But, like, she's very aware of who she is, what she wants her brand to be, how she presents herself. And you can't say that about a lot of fighters. A lot of fighters will do stuff and, like, it come off as very awkward. I thought her dance was awesome. I thought it was, and she nailed it, by the way. I'm not, like, a dance expert. I think I am, but I'm not accredited or anything. And I just thought, like, I thought she hit all the moves. I thought it looked so good. I agree. I think Alex, I was right. We're going to see a twerk, and, like, As long as you're not out and out taunting, man, go for it. Get down with your bad self. Flip off the cage. Do what you gotta do.
AK Lee with the heel turn on the late great Canadian icon Ryan Jimmo for his epic robot.
I didn't say anything bad about that. I mean, it wasn't as good as Valerie.
I think Ryan Jimmo's was the best because that is one of any time. Like, I think that's one of the best robots I've ever seen in general. He also won in seconds. So it was a record-setting performance because, like, for whatever reason, I've been asked this question a lot in, like, the last 3 weeks, like, what's the best post-fight celebration? And I joke that I treat it the same way as performance bonuses, like, the higher, like, the more, like, the stuff going around it, like, the level of competition is how I weigh it. If you knock out Derek Brunson in Madison Square Garden, as Israel Adesanya did, and did this dance that's like taking over at Nigeria. That's an awesome one. Ryan Jimmo, record-setting performance. That's an awesome one. I can't think of a lot of other dances. Michael Venom Page, obviously, with the Pokeball is very disrespectful, especially because he just shattered someone's eye socket during that, but I digress. Matthew Mullen says, AK Lee and Cool Alex should have their own show.
I've been saying for years. Well, I've only known him for like a year, but yeah.
What would it be called?
Thank you, Matthew Mullen.
Sheila wants to let me know that the judge I'm referring to is Doug Crosby, and it was Chuck Menefall, not Mark Raimondi, that wrote it. Yes, I remember there was a long form about that, but I just couldn't remember who wrote it. And I can't find the question anymore in the YouTube comments because we got so many. But someone asked if Kayla Harrison versus Amanda Nunes would be a bigger deal than Amanda Nunes Valentina 3. I had not pondered which one would be bigger. I would love to see both. That's tough, though. That's real tough.
Bigger?
That's real, real tough. I think it would depend on... AK, you want to start? Which one do you think would be a bigger deal to the eyes of MMA fans?
I think by the time that this fight could potentially happen, I think Harrison, I'll go as far as say, I think Harrison Nunez would be much bigger. Much, much bigger. I think Harrison is someone who can, with the right marketing, well, I actually think PFL has done a good job with her. You know, as far as much reach as you can have when you're not the UFC, when you're not as established as the UFC, I think they've done a good job. They put her front and center as much as they can. I think she's done a lot of media. She's a two-time Olympian. There are a lot of people who are familiar with her. I know judo is, I know maybe it's not one of the marquee sports of the Olympics in the United States, but she certainly, I think, elevated it. Again, the first American to win gold, then the first American to do it twice. And by the way, for anyone who doesn't, I'm not saying American woman, the first American to win gold judo, the first American to win gold twice. So she's already a history maker and really took to sort of culture. For someone who was like very, half in, half out, you know, for the longest time. Like, are you going to do it or you're not? She's like, I don't know. She's really gone all in on the MMA culture. And I think that's
she's
great.
She's a fantastic interview, too. Mm-hmm. Like, post-fight, off-season. Like, we went to that. Cool Alex and I were at that second Dominance MMA Media Day. She held court. Mm. She would call out male, like, I asked about Invicta, and she called out all the male fighters for not watching the Invicta fights the night before. Like,
good.
During the press conference. She had this really spirited argument with Henry Cejudo over what was a bigger deal, winning a gold medal in wrestling or judo. And Habib said, judo. Judo is king. So that was a fun one, too. So, yeah, she's great. But Cool Alex, which one would be a bigger deal to you, personally?
If it happened right now, it would be Nunes Shevchenko. But I agree with AK, if you give it time to promote Kayla to like more of like the UFC centric fans, it would be Nunes Harrison. I agree. I mean, she's just unapologetically Kayla Harrison, and that is just, it's so rare to find somebody who's so confident in themselves and so confident in what they believe in. Like, she just completely just believes that she is going to be the greatest fighter of all time, and that is, it's so refreshing to hear someone, and it doesn't come off cocky when she does. It just comes off like, this is factual, this is what I believe in myself. And if you listen to Damon's interview with her, she's like, I don't like when people tell me not to say things like that. She's like, but I'm not supposed to believe in myself. Like, I mean, that's the good kind of positivity. You should believe in yourself. You just don't have to wake up at 5 a.m. and take cold showers to do it.
There you go. You don't need, doesn't The Rock have an app to like wake up at 4 in the morning and like work out? It's called like The Rock Clock or something like that.
You know, anyway. If I had The Rock's portable gym that he brings in like all his movies,
Iron Paradise?
I'd be working out at 4 a.m. too, because I'd be the only one there, and it'd be
also
awesome.
Also, if I was the highest paid app person on planet Earth, I would probably work out every single day as well. And if I was getting ready to play Black Adam, but I don't want to talk about Black Adam because I can talk about it for hours.
Did you ever read that thing where he eats like 8 meals a day, a day? To be that big, you have to. And again, you're right. When you're rich and you have your own personal chef, it's probably a lot easier. But shoot, man, I couldn't eat. Even if I had someone cooking for me, I couldn't eat 8 meals a day.
There was a side note before I go back to Harrison Nunes talk. There was I can't remember which website did it, but they tried to eat J.J. Watt's diet for like a week, and they gave up after 2 days. Because it was all like chicken and rice, and it was like,
it's too much protein.
It's way too much protein. Oof. Anyway, the Kayla Harrison man and Nunes one would be very interesting because they both train at ATT, so I don't know how that would work. I want to see both. I would give Kayla Harrison an immediate title shot if she ever jumped to the UFC, especially 145, because it's like, who else is there? I did not like Dana White saying, I don't know if she's ready. Because we saw, and I don't want to call her out, but like the Gina Mazzani fight that we just saw, her body gave out on her. A lot of people were saying like, that was like her second opportunity. Like, if you're saying Kayla Harrison's not ready, but then Gina's fighting on this high level card, like I don't get it. Also, someone on Twitter had, I think it was in response to either Damon's interview in the comments or whatever, they said Kayla Harrison will never be in the UFC. Because then they would have to promote her as the first Olympic gold medalist in judo in America. Because Ronda only won bronze, and they can't say Ronda came in third. You can't say Ronda came in third because they always refer to as an Olympic medalist, never bronze medalist. They don't want to have. They don't want to give her the rub.
The petty wars. The petty wars.
Mm-hmm. And because no one has asked about this, and he is the man of the hour, would you guys all think Charles Oliveira's win over Michael Chandler? Who wants to start?
I was cheering through my TV. I was so excited. It gave me such anxiety though when they leave the cage and they like run through the audience and like shake Dana White down. Like, I'm like, oh my God, please like just get out of there. Go back to the octagon. But no, oh my gosh, how exciting for him. I mean, it was like emotional. You just felt that from him, and watching him go back to Brazil with the ball, for someone who's worked so hard for so long and didn't get anything handed to him at all, and then came up from like a serious illness, like in his interview that he did. I mean, just what a story. I mean, it's just, I love to see it end with a happy ending. I love that.
Yeah, I was very happy for Charles and his team. Michael Chandler has always been very nice to me. I think he's a good interview and talk, but I get people don't like him. I've never really interacted with him outside of the octagon or cage or whatever it was, but to his credit, regardless of what you think of him as an individual, he handled his loss like a professional. He went in there and said, Charles is the champ. He won fair and square. I'll be back, this and that. So he wasn't sour grapes whatsoever. I think the UFC is very happy with the product they got in Michael Chandler because he's the guy that you can put on TV. He's well-spoken. He doesn't really do anything. He adopted a son. His wife was around all the time. She was very friendly with the fans as well from what I saw. So the UFC is very clearly happy with what they got in Michael Chandler. And I think moving forward, he's going to have a job with them, at least as a commentator or on the desk for a while. But AK, what did you think of Charles Oliveira's win over Michael Chandler?
People, go read, if you haven't, Guillermo Cruz's feature on Charles Oliveira's difficult upbringing. It's great. I think it's still pinned to our front page on MMAfighting.com. So definitely read about that and how his first training partner was a girl who used to beat him up pretty much every day. And it's a great, so he had a lot of difficulties he faced. It's a great story. Charles Oliveira is the best lightweight in the world right now. I don't want to hear anything else right now. He's the best lightweight. I'm not saying the UFC title is the be all end all decider, but I think he's done enough. Plus winning the title, I think that matters. Don't go out to MMAfighting.com and read Jed Meshew's UFC 262 aftermath, about Khabib Nurmagomedov. MMAfighting.com, Jed Meshew, UFC 262 aftermath. Don't read that article because I don't know. He's so hung up on Khabib. Yeah, look, if Khabib is out there and decides to come back, whatever, I'll pick him over anyone at 155. But he's not.
Someone made a very interesting point where one, because the people are confused about Oliveira Chandler, and I know we got Bellator Media Day coming up, so we'll end quickly, but they didn't want Poirier or Gaethje or anyone like that fighting in the main event because they didn't want Khabib hanging over the main event. They didn't want someone that Khabib had already beaten, which I hadn't thought of that, which is 100% true. As soon as they said 100%
true. Charles Oliveira hasn't fought Khabib. Michael Chandler hasn't fought Khabib. So you can maintain that illusion. As absurd as it is, you can maintain that illusion of, well, we don't know if they would have 100%. Fought Khabib. We know he can beat Poirier. I know I can see people rolling their eyes in the comments like, that makes no sense. And I'm like, that's just a very basic way of presenting it. Fair or not.
All right, we're going to do really quick hits, and then we're going to wrap it up. Let's see what we got. Let's see if I can find it first. Oh, I just turned off everything. Why did I
don't know what. Okay, I'll see if I don't know. What do we got here?
No, I found it. I got it.
Okay, go for it.
Quick hits. So real quick, how come Tony had four appointments? Dana White privilege? I don't know. Tony Ferguson can do what Tony Ferguson wants. I didn't notice it until after the fact. I wasn't paying attention. It's just the end of Kevin Aguilar, AK. Yes or no? I'm assuming in the UFC, not as in he gets.
No. Yeah, released. He's getting released. He will be released.
What makes a point style fighter? Is Yan Xiaonan a point style fighter? Oh, these are questions from Azan Zaman on the site.
Cool, Alex, you want to field this one?
Are they talking about like point style karate or like somebody who fights for points only?
Probably both. I don't think anyone fights to win on points, as Callan Chukagian said. She just fights, and if she sees Odom, she takes it, and if she knocks someone out, she knocks someone out. She just chooses the path that will lead to victory. I don't think Yan Xiaonan is a point style fighter. I just think she's won close decisions and she's just been better than her opponent that night. Will she do that against Carla? I don't know, because I don't know anyone that's looked, outside of Joanna, that has looked really good against Carla. Carla's one of those fighters that'll just make you look like you forgot how to fight. She's been a lot. Like, except that fight against Alexa Grasso in Mexico was awesome. I can't remember if that one fight of the night, but that should have won fight of the night if it didn't. Because, and speaking of Alexa Grasso, Callan Chukagian called out Alexa Grasso. I'm here for it. I love that fight. What to look forward to at Bellator 259 besides Edwards versus Austin Vanford? Oh, I don't know. Chris Cyborg versus Leslie Smith 2, the rematch. Well, that's a very weird fight to point out. I guess Austin Vanford has Paige Van Zandt.
It's a good fight.
Rub, and, sure. Leon, and Fabian Edwards is Leon Edwards' brother, correct? P.S. Correct. You got my name correct. Awesome. I got a name correct. So, quick hits right there. Anyway, you guys know the drill. We got Bellator Media Day coming up. We will not be streaming it, but we will have all the scrums, the selected scrums up. That'll be cool. Alex will be doing that, and they'll get clips out. And then AK will be writing his articles and giving the Orange Cassidy thumbs up. So, AK, what do you got to say before you ride off into the Moncton sunset?
The Alex and the Alex Tokyo Drift, massive success, much like the Tokyo Drift film was in the Fast and Furious franchise. This was just as good, if not better.
Cool. I've never seen Fast and the Furious.
I have to tell my story.
Oh, yeah.
Really quick.
Is there time?
Okay. Yeah, there's time. There's time. So I was a freshman in college, and this is when, because I remember vividly when The Rock joined Twitter. He joined Twitter right before he made his return to the WWE, and this is right when Fast Five was coming out. And he had tweeted he was doing giveaways in select cities, like Phoenix, Dallas, LA, New York, like all the major ones. I was like, ah, I'm not winning that, whatever. I had a flip phone, by the way, so I didn't even have a smartphone yet, because this was like 2009. So if I wanted to use mobile Twitter, I had to literally go on twitter.com on my like flip phone like web server. So I'm like, whatever, not winning. So I go to the gym, I come back and shower, and I get out, and I just happen to look at Twitter, and like the second I looked at Twitter, it just coincidentally, The Rock had tweeted, The Rock, and if you follow the WWE, The Rock talks about eating pie a lot. He's not actually talking about pie. He's talking about something else. He's like, The Rock is hungry for pie, pizza pie, go where you think this is, or something like that. And I know I'm about a block away from Pizzeria Bianco, which is the number one rated pizza place in Phoenix. So I'm like, well, it has to be there. So I just throw on the gym clothes I had already been wearing. So I'm disgusting. And I sprint down the street. And there's maybe 100 people looking for The Rock there. They're like, where's The Rock? Where's The Rock? Obviously, The Rock wasn't there. But someone walked out wearing a Fast Five shirt and was like, you guys found the location. When he tweets out the password, first person to say it wins. And there's like 100 people here. So I'm like on my flip phone just hitting refresh. And I hit refresh. And The Rock says, first one to yell, do you smell what The Rock is cooking, wins. So naturally, I scream it at the top of my lungs. And I win. So then the lady comes up to me and hands me a phone. And I go, hello? And it's The Rock. So I talk to The Rock for 5 minutes about college football, wrestling, and the Fast and the Furious. And then he goes, I also want you to know that if you're going to go see the movie tonight, and then Britt's going to give you tickets. And I turn around and Britt is like handing me tickets. He goes, these are on me. It's a movie theater completely bought out. It's only you and four friends are going to go. So, and then when we went there, I also got a golden ticket that said like your congratulations as being The Rock's special guest to see Fast Five.
Do you still have it?
Of course I still have it. It's like in my, it's like in a folder, like literally like 3 feet away from me. I just have to go through it. So I won a Twitter contest, spoke to The Rock for 5 minutes. And then he bought me and four of my friends tickets to see Fast Five in a movie theater that was bought out specifically for The Rock in Arizona. And people
How
offered
is not
me
your Twitter bio? How is this not your Twitter bio?
That's a good question. But I've since met The Rock twice since then. And I've told him both times, and he's naturally, it's the first time he's heard it both times. But my goal is to bring that golden ticket to him next, because both of them were the backstage UFC fights, so I couldn't really, you know, ask for photos or anything. If I ever see him in the wild and I have that golden ticket, I'm going to ask him to sign it or take a photo with it for me.
Oh. Yeah.
So I won a Twitter contest in Phoenix, and I talked to The Rock for 5 minutes on the phone, and he bought my ticket to see Fast Five. That's my closing promo. This
that was
podcast.
Worth the wait. That was worth the wait.
Yeah. It's one of my go-to stories in my back pocket. Anyway, you can find this podcast on, you know, YouTube, YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, all the podcasts. We'll be back next week. Hopefully, we'll be back in normal time. But that's been Alex. This has been Alex and Alex Tokyo Drift 3, whatever AK called it. Until then, we're out.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over. Age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.